This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. Later in our show, we'll be talking about the rise in pet adoptions during this pandemic, and we want to hear your stories, too, about the furry friends you've added to your lives during this time. So be prepared to give us a call at 513-419-7100 or send us an email at talk@wvxu.org. But first, we start the show. Former Congressman Steve Driehaus leaving Cincinnati for a rock. As resident senior director for the National Democratic Institute, Driehaus will live in Erbil, Kurdistan, and he will work on democratization, election fairness, political party building, and empowering women in politics. And joining Cincinnati Edition to discuss his new work is Good Government Group president and CEO, who's also starting in his new role as resident senior director with the National Democratic Institute, Steve Driehaus. Steve, welcome to our program.
Thanks, Michael. Appreciate it.
Well, you know, you've been around here long enough to know that moving from one side of town to another is quite an ordeal. You're making quite a bigger move to the other side of the globe. Why?
Well, it's something that's always interested me. You know, I spent some time with my family overseas in both Swaziland and then Morocco running the Peace Corps after I served in Congress. So we were overseas for about 6 years. And, you know, this ability to bring together my interest in governance as well as international development was one that very much intrigued me. And NDI, the National Democratic Institute, is a great organization. And so I'm looking forward to starting with them.
Well, tell us what the National Democratic Institute is.
NDI was started by Congress about 35 years ago. And they were established to spread democratization around the globe. They now work in about 50 different countries. We work on party building. We work on training members of parliament and prime ministers, for example. We work on election transparency and making sure that elections are held fairly and freely. We also, at least in Iraq, we are working on engaging women in politics and women in government, trying to get women more involved in the process and taking on higher profile roles, and just really standing up for the principles of democracy, you know, principles that we very much believe in, but also are widely held around the globe.
You know, it wasn't that long ago, although time is very strange these days, but it doesn't seem like it was that long ago that we in this country were spending a lot of time thinking and talking about Iraq. And we don't have it front of mind the same way that we used to. We hardly hear any references to it at all since the war. And I'm wondering if you can help us understand the lay of the land in Iraq now?
Sure. Well, I'm going to be in Kurdistan, which is in northern Iraq. It's an autonomous zone in northern Iraq, where many of the Kurdish people in Iraq currently reside. But Iraq has a centralized government, multiple regions around the country, but we still have armed militias in parts of the west and in the south, where local governance is really done through these armed militias. And so it's a challenge, you know, trying to work on democratization and work on governance, depending upon the stability of those areas. But, you know, this is somewhat typical when a society is transforming from an authoritarian form of government or a government that is broken down and you don't see as much centralized power to a democracy where people are given a voice and people are allowed to step up and vote and elect the people they want to represent them. So, you know, it's a challenging region. You're very right in that the military action that we saw several years ago is not taking place today. I believe President Trump recently said that he's going to withdraw further the number of troops that we have in Iraq from about 5,000 to 3,500. And now, you know, you're in this long, slow process of very difficult work of building democracy and sustainable, transparent governance moving forward.
We're talking with Steve Driehaus here on Cincinnati Edition. He previously served Cincinnati in the Ohio State House and also in the U.S. House of Representatives. He is president and CEO of Good Government Group, but will soon become the resident senior director with the National Democratic Institute and will live in Erbil, Kurdistan. Steve, when we think about the military presence from 20 or so years ago, almost 20 years ago in Iraq that America sent, I believe we knew the term Operation Iraqi Freedom pretty well. And you're talking about the lay of the land right now involving local governance at the hands of armed militias. What exactly does that mean? How is a local government operated there by armed militias? What does that process look like day to day?
Well, the fact is that the government of Iraq has control over certain parts of the country, but certain parts of the country remain in the hands of, say, a Shia militia or a Sunni militia, answering to different leaders. And some of those, especially Shia militia, are in relations with Iran. And so Iran has a very strong influence in parts of Iraq. We're still, you know, waiting for the time when the Iraqi government has control over the entire country from a governance standpoint. Because while they do nationally at the local level, that's certainly not the case in parts of the country, not in all of the country, but in parts of the country. So parts of the country have less, allegiance toward the Iraqi government than others.
You talked earlier that one of your goals will be to work closely with women. And that's a challenge in the Middle East because of the culture and the politics there and the way that governments operate in Middle Eastern countries. How will that work, do you think?
Well, I think it's actually going quite well. I was there about a year ago to do some training with members of parliament. Many of the leaders I was working with were, in fact, women, and they were kind of setting the standard for women in government. And I think as we see more women step up and we encourage their leadership, we will see more and more women get involved. You know, quite frankly, in many Middle Eastern countries, women are very powerful, very strong, yet their presence isn't seen publicly as much in a government setting. And so we are seeing that happen, certainly in Kurdistan and also in the Iraqi parliament. And we want to continue to grow that.
When we think about training members of parliament on how to operate their government, I guess I'm first reminded of recently watching Hamilton on Disney, seeing that for the first time and seeing this interpretation of the way our own country was founded and how our founders learned to operate a government. It seems so foreign to us in America now because we've been operating this way to some degree for a couple of centuries now. What does that mean to train people in parliament? I mean, are you basically explaining this is how government works now and they have to learn not just like Robert's Rules of Order, but the way that they engage and adopt laws?
You know, not necessarily. I think you've got to be very careful not to impose your culture, you know, on another culture when you're working in there. So I think it's very important for us to go in and learn the culture, learn how governance structures are established and how they've been seen traditionally, and then apply what we've agreed to and what Iraq has agreed to in terms of human rights and what human rights are relative to the United Nations Declaration on Human Rights. So when we talk about principles of governance, we talk about things like transparency. We talk about freedom of the press, freedom of speech, freedom of assembly. These things that we take for granted. Now, whether or not that takes the form of a representative democracy or a direct democracy, that varies depending upon the country, depending upon the culture. And so I think it's very important for us to work on these principles, which many people hold dear, not just in the United States, but around the globe, but do it within an appropriate cultural context.
Is there any challenge for an American right now leading such educational opportunities for a foreign government when we have these basic fundamental challenges in our own country that are unprecedented, where we have questions about whether there's transparency in the way we vote, if the way we vote is going to count, there's foreign interference in our voting process? Is there any credibility that's lost on behalf of an American who's going now to foreign countries to teach them how to operate a government?
You know, I think it's challenging, but I think what we fall back on is the institutions, and we fall back on our Constitution and the principles that I mentioned previously. It's not so much about the players that are leading at the time, but it's about the principles and whether or not we are living up to the principles that are in our Constitution, that are in the constitutions of so many countries around the world. So it's one thing to have these things on paper. It's another thing entirely to be living them. And I think that's the challenge. And we find that in our own democracy. And I think we are seeing now, you know, how fragile those institutions can be and how fragile those principles can be. So I think we are reminded today in the United States that democracy and governance isn't something that you can take for granted. It's just always being there, but something that you have to constantly work for. And I think that's the case here. And I think that's certainly the case in many countries around the globe.
And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. I'm joined today by Steve Driehaus, the former state representative and congressman from Cincinnati, who will soon be heading to Iraq for his new role as resident senior director with the National Democratic Institute. And Steve, you noted that after your time in Congress, you had taken your family to Swaziland and Morocco on behalf of the United States Peace Corps. And I'm wondering if you're taking family with you on this new adventure?
No, Iraq's a little different. And the security environment in Iraq is a little different than Swaziland and Morocco. So I will be going alone. And obviously, I have a team of folks there in Iraq. But my family will be staying here. And they're very happy here in Cincinnati. Cincinnati is home. And so I will be coming back frequently, but I'll be based in Iraq.
Do you have a length of a term that you plan to spend there?
It's a job. And so I don't know how long I'll be there. You know, we'll see. We'll see how things work out.
How does your family feel when you discussed this opportunity?
Mixed. You know, I think my wife is very supportive and my family is very supportive. Obviously, there are some things that they'll miss with me not here. You know, my son's going to have to find somebody else to help him rake the leaves. My daughter's going to have to find somebody else to call when the car breaks down, or they can try calling me in Iraq. So, you know, things like that. It's, you know, I'm a dad, I'm a husband, I'm a son and a brother. And, you know, so I'll miss that. But at the same time, you know, telecommunications have improved so dramatically that, you know, you're just a phone call away or a WhatsApp, you know, call away or a Zoom call away from somebody across, you know, halfway across the globe. And so it'll be a little challenging, but at the same time, we'll be in regular communication.
What about you? Did you have any second thoughts at all? You mentioned that the security situation there is different than your time in Swaziland or Morocco. I mean, do you have any fears at all?
Not so much fears. I see it as a challenge. I wasn't looking for this. I was perfectly happy doing what I was doing with the Good Government Group and the work we were doing here locally. Like I said, I had done some training with NDI, both in Iraq and in Armenia. And when this position opened up, they asked me if I would be interested in applying for it. And after some discussions with my wife, I ended up going ahead and applying. And it does marry, you know, my professional interests, that of government and international development, in a country where this is very, very challenging. So, you know, to me, it's professionally, it's very challenging, and it brings together my professional interests and my professional experience. And so it's something that I wanted to do, and I was very intrigued by. And so I look forward to it. I see it as a challenge. I'm not fearful or anything like that. It's a challenge. And we've got a lot of good people around the globe in environments that are not quite as safe as they might be if they're home here in Cincinnati. But they're doing the good work, and they're doing work on behalf of the United States, and doing work that I think is advancing the cause of democracy and moving it forward.
Iraq's government is pretty young, and we talked moments ago about how some of the areas in the region of in the nation of Iraq have armed militias in control. But I'm wondering if you can help illustrate for us what life is like in Iraqi cities. You're going to be living in Erbil, Kurdistan. You reference that as an autonomous area where Kurdish people live. What is life like day to day in some of those cities?
Well, I think it's very similar to life here, quite frankly. I would encourage people to go to YouTube, go to Google, look at videos of life in Kurdistan. It's a beautiful area. People are now vacationing in Kurdistan. It's mountainous with a lot of waterfalls, etc. Erbil itself is the longest continually inhabited city in the world. It's estimated that people have lived in Erbil between 6,000 and 7,000 years. It's the part of the world that we might know as Mesopotamia, you know, in the Bible. You know, when we talk about the Tigris and Euphrates River, they run right through Iraq. And And so this is a, you know, this is a very old part of the world in terms of civilization, and it's got a tremendous amount of culture, but at the same time, it's very modern. And so I'd encourage people to go, you know, go online. If you wonder about Iraq or any other country for that matter, I think oftentimes our perceptions are founded in what we see on TV or what we, you know, were taught in class years ago. When in fact, the reality is far different. And so, Iraq is quite modern. They continually work on the infrastructure that was destroyed during the war, but that's improving greatly. And quite frankly, what they're struggling with right now is just like what we're struggling with is COVID, and what COVID has done to the economy, but also what COVID has done to their way of life. So the entire world is coping with life under COVID, and so. Iraq and Kurdistan in particular are also struggling with that.
How are they handling this where you're going? I'm sure that's got to be something that you've looked into because we know what our restrictions are, what our opportunities are under the pandemic and the associated restrictions. But how are the governments there considering that, you know, the national government seems somewhat fractured? How are they responding and are you comfortable with it?
Well, yeah, it's very similar to what we're seeing here. There are a lot of precautions being taken relative to people being out and about and when people are allowed out. Until just recently, the airport had been closed. And so they just recently reopened the airport in Erbil. Just like here, people are wearing face masks. A lot of meetings and conversations going on via Zoom or online. Not a lot in person. My staff, for example, isn't working at our office. They're working from home, much like people are doing here. So, you'll find that the precautions being taken in Iraq are very, very similar to precautions being taken all over the world relative to COVID. And I think it just depends on kind of where that country is in the cycle of COVID. And they seem to be in a cycle that's very similar to ours. And, you know, they're seeing a spike, just like we've seen a spike recently, and they're coping with it. But, you know, it's hurt the economy. It's hurt the economy quite severely. And I think that's the case in many countries.
We're talking with Steve Driehaus, the former state representative and congressman from Cincinnati, who will begin a new journey as resident senior director with the National Democratic Institute. He'll be based out of Erbil, Kurdistan, working with Iraqis. And Steve, when do you head over there?
We're looking at the end of the month is currently how flights are lining up. So it looks probably toward the end of this month.
Dumb question, but how do you pack for something like this?
You take everything. I don't need a lot of stuff. So I'll take some clothes, a couple bags. And, you know, the housing is set up. I'll have an apartment there and, you know, everything will be fine.
Do you speak Arabic or Kurdish?
I do not. I have a little bit of Arabic, not much, and no Kurdish. But my intent is to learn at least a basic minimum of Kurdish dialect so I can at least do greetings and some thank yous and things like that.
Did you see yourself working at some point in international development like this? I mean, you served in the State House, you served in the Congress, you've been in government a long time here stateside, but now you've had opportunities abroad now multiple times. Is this something that you saw your life ending up with?
Well, yeah, because prior to all of that government work, I served as a Peace Corps volunteer in West Africa. So after college, I was a volunteer in a small village in Senegal, West Africa, for 2.5 years. And I think I kind of fell in love with working overseas and learning new cultures. And so I've always tried to balance those two interests of being overseas and working in international development and also working on government. And, you know, obviously you raise a family during that time and you have to take into account the safety and security of the family and what's best for the kids. And I think we tried to do that in trying to balance where we are. But Cincinnati's home. My family's here. I have a very large family here in Cincinnati and it will always be home. And so while I leave every once in a while, Cincinnati's still home.
A lot of Americans never really get the opportunity or take the opportunity to go overseas, whether it be for pleasure, for business, or for service like the Peace Corps. Maybe if you were to make a pitch to Americans to give that a shot. What do you see as the greatest advantages of taking some time to truly immerse yourself in a foreign nation?
Well, I think you see the world through someone else's eyes. I think if many of our decision makers had spent time as immigrants, for example, they would have a far different understanding of immigration to the United States, and our policies might reflect that. Similarly, if you're living in an environment where people are quite poor and there's subsistence farming, your understanding of poverty and day-to-day life might be quite different. You know, when I was a volunteer, we didn't have running water, we didn't have electricity, and you know, it was a real challenge to make ends meet for the families in the village. And it gives me a different perspective, and I think it gives most people a very different perspective on life and what's important and how we should prioritize things. So I would strongly encourage people to live overseas, understand different cultures, have the humility to appreciate the fact that there are many cultures around this globe, there are many languages, and there are many cuisines that we can learn from, and we can appreciate, and we can celebrate. And that shouldn't be a threat to us. It should be something that we celebrate. And you know, America is interesting because so many, all of those countries, quite frankly, are represented here in various parts of this country. We are a melting pot of all of those cultures and all of those cuisines and all of those languages. And I think sometimes we fail to appreciate that. So this shouldn't be a threat to us. We should open ourselves to understanding different cultures.
We're talking with Steve Driehaus. He is the new resident senior director with the National Democratic Institute, former state representative and congressman from Cincinnati. He'll be based in Iraq for this new gig that he's taking. And while there, Steve, again, you'll be working with the three main groups of Iraq's dominating political system, the Kurds, the Shiites, the Sunnis. I'm wondering, though, as a former member of Congress, and I know in your new role, this is a nonpartisan agency, the National Democratic Institute. When you look at Congress, would you now, as someone who assists in parliamentary procedure, have any advice on how our own government here in America could maybe cooperate a little more effectively?
I wish I knew. I mean, I was in the middle of that for many years. I actually believe that our elected officials cooperate far more than we see, and far more than we see in the press, far more than we see on TV. There is a lot of cooperation. There is a lot of understanding. But it would be nice if our leaders understood and worked on bringing us all together rather than dividing us for political purposes. And I'm afraid that we've, in the United States, politicized everything, that there is a Republican way of turning on a light or a Democratic way of turning on a light. It's just disturbing that every aspect of our lives seems to have been politicized. And I don't think it's helped via social media or other media outlets that tend to group us and categorize us ideologically. So to the extent that we're able to break out of that and understand that many Americans, be they Republican, Democrat, or Independent, share a set of common values, and we bring together people around those values, I think we'd be better off. And I wish we would see more of that from our leadership.
So you head to Iraq at the end of this month, and it sounds like you've got a lot of big goals and tasks ahead of you. What does, say, your first week look like? What's on your agenda?
My first week is quarantining in my apartment.
Oh,
because
sure.
I came from overseas.
Yeah.
So yeah, I have to quarantine for 2 weeks and then hit the ground running and meet with my staff and look at some of the programs we've currently got operating, evaluate those programs, look at their effectiveness. And then we have parliamentary elections coming up next June that we will be collaborating with other organizations in Iraq to hopefully make sure those go off smoothly.
Well, before we let you go, could you give us a quick government lesson? How do elections work in Iraq?
Well, very similar to how they do here. Actually, the election law is currently being drafted in Iraq. They have districts similar to ours, but in a parliamentary system, you vote for the party. You don't vote for the individual necessarily. And so a parliamentary system is somewhat different in that the party who gets the majority of the votes is then asked to form the government. Oftentimes, parties can't form a government because they don't have over 50% of the vote. And so what they will do is form coalitions. And so oftentimes when you hear of foreign governments and the coalition governments, that's multiple different parties collaborating to reach a majority in parliament. And then from that majority, they elect the prime minister. They select the prime minister, usually from the largest party that then, you know, runs the country. It's a bit different than what we have. The parliamentary system functions somewhat differently than representative democracy does, like we do. We vote for the individual. And so that's a little different. But again, the principles of democracy are still the same. And so our challenge is to accept that there are different ways to achieve these same goals. And that's what we'll be working on.
All right. Well, other than your family, what are you going to miss the most from home?
Oh, of course, chili and graters and things like that. You know, I love Cincinnati. I'll be back frequently, as I said. And look, I've got plenty of family here, and I'll be watching the Bengals and the Reds online, I'm sure. And so we'll keep in touch.
Steve Driehaus is the new resident senior director with the National Democratic Institute. You've known him for a long time as a state representative and as a congressman from Cincinnati. Steve, good luck to you. Thank you for the time you gave us, and maybe we can check in while you're over there.
Sure. Thanks, Michael. Much appreciated.
And you've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer of today's show is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Our theme music is composed by Rob Fetters. You can find archives of our program online at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks.